Hey everyone, welcome back for another deep dive. You know how we're always talking about getting the most out of life? Well, this time we're diving deep into something that can really help make that happen, making your money work harder for you.
Yeah, it's kind of like unlocking a secret level in the game of life, right?
Totally. We've been digging through a ton of research articles and expert advice, and let me tell you, there's some seriously valuable stuff in there.
Definitely. We've got notes on everything from understanding those sometimes confusing financial institutions to figuring out those smart saving strategies everyone's always talking about.
Exactly. So if you've ever felt like your finances are a bit of a mystery or you're just looking to level up your money game, you're in the right place.
Absolutely. This deep dive is all about giving you the knowledge and the tools to make your money work harder for you so you can focus on living your best life.
All right, let's jump right in. One of the first things that popped up in our research was all about financial institutions. You know, banks, credit unions, all that jazz.
No. Right. And I think it's something that a lot of people, myself included, kind of get a little fuzzy on.
Yeah, for sure. What is a financial institution anyway?
Well, the basic idea is that they're organizations that handle money transactions. So pretty much everything to do with money moving around.
Okay, so like when I deposit my paycheck or pay my bills online.
Yeah.
That's all happening through a financial institution.
Exactly. They're kind of like the behind-the-scenes players in the whole financial system.
I see. So then what's the difference between a bank and a credit union?
Good question. So both banks and credit unions offer a lot of the same services, you know, checking accounts, savings accounts, loans, all that. But the big difference is in who owns them and what their main goals are.
Okay. I'm listening.
So banks are for-profit institutions. They're owned by shareholders, which means their main goal is to make money for those investors.
Got it. So they're like any other business trying to maximize their profits.
Exactly. Credit unions, on the other hand, are not for profit. They're owned by their members, the people who use their services.
So it's more like a cooperative kind of thing.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. And because they're not driven by profits for shareholders, credit unions can often offer higher interest rates on savings accounts and lower fees on loans.
Oh, that sounds pretty good.
It can be. But there's a trade-off. They might have fewer branches and ATMs compared to big banks.
So it's like choosing between a big chain store and a local mom-and-pop shop. You might get better deals at the local place, but the big store might be more convenient.
Exactly. It all depends on what's important to you. Do you value personalized service and potentially higher returns? Or is having a wide network of branches and all the bells and whistles more important?
Makes sense. So there's no one-size-fits-all answer when it comes to choosing between banks and credit unions.
Nope. It's all about figuring out what's the best fit for your own needs and financial goals.
Okay, that's super helpful to know. Now let's talk about something I found really interesting in the research. It was about Albert Einstein and interest rates.
Oh, yeah. Einstein had some pretty strong opinions about compound interest, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, who knew Einstein was a personal finance guru, right?
Right. Well, he famously called compound interest the eighth wonder of the world.
Wow. The eighth wonder of the world. That's a pretty bold statement coming from a guy who knew a thing or two about wonders.
It is, and for good reason. It's this incredible concept that can really supercharge your savings over time.
All right, I'm intrigued. But before we get into the magic of compound interest, let's make sure we're all on the same page. Can you quickly break down how interest rates work in general?
Sure. So basically, interest is the cost of borrowing money or the reward for saving it.
Okay, so if I borrow money, I pay interest to the lender, and if I save money, I earn interest.
Exactly. It's like two sides of the same coin.
Got it. And the interest rate is just the percentage that determines how much interest I pay or earn.
Right. So let's say you have a savings account with 2% interest rate. That means you'll earn an extra 2% on the money you have saved each year.
Okay. That makes sense. But I remember reading something in the research about a rule of 72, something to do with figuring out how long it takes for your money to double. What's that all about?
Ah, yes, the rule of 72. It's a handy little trick to quickly estimate how long it'll take for your money to double at a given interest rate.
Ooh, I love a good shortcut. Tell me more.
It's super easy. All you do is divide 72 by the interest rate. So if you have a savings account earning 4% interest, you divide 72 by 4, which equals 18. That means it would take approximately 18 years for your money to double.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I'm definitely going to be using that trick.
It's definitely handy. But here's the thing. The average interest rate for a standard savings account these days is pretty low, often less than 1%.
Yeah, I've noticed that. It's kind of discouraging.
It can be. If we use the rule of 72 on a 0.5% interest rate, it would take over 140 years for your money to double.
140 years. I'll be dust by then. It seems like those traditional savings accounts might not be the most exciting path to financial growth.
You're not wrong. That's where things start to get really interesting. And that brings us back to Einstein's fascination with compound interest.
Okay, now you've got my attention.
Yeah.
Let's unpack this magic of compound interest and see how we can make it work for us.
All right, imagine you invest $1,000 at a 5% annual compound interest rate.
Okay, $1,000 at 5%, I'm picturing it.
After the first year, you'd earn $50 in interest, right?
Right, so far so good.
But here's the cool part. In the second year, you're not just earning interest on that original $1,000, you're also earning interest on that $50 you earned in the first year.
So the interest is earning interest. It's like a snowball effect.
Exactly. And it just keeps building on itself year after year.
Okay, I'm starting to see why Einstein was so impressed by this.
Now, after 30 years at that 5% compound interest rate, your $1,000 would have grown to over $4,300.
Whoa, that's over four times the initial investment. That's pretty amazing.
It is. And here's the kicker. If you had just earned simple interest, meaning you only earned interest on the original $1,000, you'd only have $2,500 after 30 years.
That's a huge difference. Almost $2,000 more with compound interest.
Exactly. That's like free money.
I like the sound of that.
Yeah.
So the moral of the story is start investing early and let the magic of compound interest work its wonders.
Exactly. Time is your best friend when it comes to compound interest. The sooner you start, the more time your money has to grow.
Okay, I'm sold. Compound interest is officially my new best friend. But hold on. There's a whole bunch of different account options out there. It's a bit overwhelming to know where to even start.
Yeah, it can be. Let's break down some of the most common types of accounts and see which ones might be a good fit for different goals.
Okay, sounds good. We already touched on those standard savings accounts with their less than stellar interest rates.
Yeah, let's move on from those. What else is out there? Well, if you're okay with locking your money away for a set period of time and you're looking for higher returns, you might want to consider certificates of deposit or CDs. They usually offer higher interest rates than savings accounts, but you can't touch the money before the maturity date without paying a penalty.
So higher returns, but less flexibility. Got it. What if I'm looking for something in between a savings account and a CD?
Then a money market account, or MMA, could be a good option. It's kind of like a hybrid of the two. You might get a slightly higher interest rate than a regular savings account, and you might even have some limited check writing privileges.
So, a bit more flexibility than a CD, but potentially a lower return.
Got it.
What if I'm thinking really long term, like saving for retirement?
For long term goals, like retirement, you'll want to start thinking about investments, things that have the potential for bigger growth over time.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But the world of investments can feel a bit intimidating. Where do I even begin?
Don't worry, we'll get to all that. But first, there's one important thing we need to talk about, fees.
Fees. I knew there had to be a catch.
Well, it's not really a catch, but it is something to be aware of. Fees can really eat into your returns if you're not careful.
Yeah, I read somewhere that even a small annual fee can add up to a lot of money over time.
Absolutely. So it's important to pay attention to fees when you're choosing financial institutions and investment products. Always compare fees across different providers and try to find options with low or no fees whenever possible.
Okay, noted. Minimize those pesky fees. Got it. So now that we've covered the basics of financial institutions and talked about those sneaky fees, let's dive into the exciting world of investments. I'm ready to unlock that secret level.
All right, let's do it. When it comes to investing, one of the first things to consider is your time horizon.
Time horizon. Yeah. So, like, how long I plan to invest the money.
Exactly. Are you saving for retirement in 30 years, or are you hoping to buy a house in the next five?
Okay, so the timeline definitely matters. What else should I be thinking about?
Well, another big factor is your risk tolerance. How comfortable are you with the possibility of your investments going up and down?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
I guess some people are okay with taking bigger risks for the chance of bigger rewards, while others prefer to play it safe.
Right. And your risk tolerance can depend on a lot of things, like your age, your financial goals, even your personality.
So like a 25-year-old saving for retirement might be more comfortable taking risks than someone who's closer to retirement age.
Exactly. A younger investor has more time to recover if things don't go as planned, while someone nearing retirement might want to focus on preserving their savings.
Got it. So it's all about finding the right balance between risk and reward based on my own situation.
That's the idea. And remember, Risk isn't always a bad thing. Sometimes you need to take calculated risks to reach your financial goals.
Okay, so don't be afraid to step outside my comfort zone a little bit, as long as I'm being smart about it.
Exactly. Now let's talk about some specific investment options, starting with those long-term goals like retirement. One option you might consider is U.S. Treasury bonds. They're considered very low risk because they're backed by the U.S. government.
4%. That's not too shabby. But I've heard that the stock market can offer even higher returns, right?
Yeah, that's true. Historically, the stock market has had higher average returns than bonds. But it's also important to remember that the stock market is riskier.
So higher potential rewards come with higher potential risks. How can I manage that risk?
That's where diversification comes in. It's basically the idea of spreading your investments across different types of assets, like stocks, bonds, real estate, even things like precious metals.
Don't put all your eggs in one basket, right?
Exactly. By diversifying, you're reducing the chances of any one investment wiping out your entire portfolio.
That makes sense. So how do I actually go about diversifying my investments?
There are a few different ways. You can invest in individual stocks and bonds yourself, or you can choose mutual funds or exchange-traded funds, ETFs, which are baskets of different securities.
So with a mutual fund or ETF, I can get instant diversification without having to pick and choose individual stocks.
Exactly. It's a good option for beginners who want to start investing but don't have the time or expertise to manage a complex portfolio.
Okay, that sounds like something I could handle. What about those long-term goals we were talking about earlier, like retirement? How do those fit into the picture?
Well, retirement planning is a whole deep dive in itself. But one of the most important things to remember is to start early.
Time is money, right?
It really is. The sooner you start saving and investing for retirement, the more time your money has to grow. And thanks to the magic of compound interest, those early contributions can really add up over time.
Okay, got it. Start early, diversify, and let compound interest do its thing.
Exactly. Now, before we wrap up this section on investments, there's one more thing I want to mention. The importance of having a financial plan.
A financial plan?
Yeah.
Like a roadmap for my money.
Exactly. It's basically a document that outlines your financial goals, your income, your expenses, your assets, and your debts.
So it's like a big picture view of my entire financial situation.
Right. And it can help you make informed decisions about how to manage your money and reach your financial goals.
That sounds super helpful. But creating a financial plan seems like a daunting task.
It doesn't have to be. There are lots of resources available online, and you can always consult with a financial advisor for personalized guidance.
Okay, good to know. So we've covered investments, diversification, retirement planning, and financial plans.
Mm.
What's next on our deep dive agenda?
Well, now that we've talked about the technical side of things, let's shift gears and explore the often overlooked but equally important psychological side of money.
The psychology of money. What do you mean by that?
Our emotions and beliefs about money can have a huge impact on our financial decisions.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. Sometimes I make impulse purchases when I'm feeling stressed or down.
That's a perfect example. Our emotions can often lead us to make choices that aren't in our best financial interests.
So how do we manage those emotions and make sure they're not sabotaging our financial goals?
It starts with awareness. Pay attention to your spending habits and try to identify any patterns or triggers that might be leading you to make unhealthy financial choices.
So like keeping a spending journal or tracking my expenses for a month to see where my money is really going.
Exactly. Once you have a better understanding of your spending patterns, you can start to develop strategies for managing those emotional triggers.
Okay, that makes sense. What else can we do to improve our relationship with money?
Another important step is to challenge any negative beliefs you might have about money. Many people grow up with limiting beliefs about wealth or success that can hold them back financially.
Like the idea that rich people are greedy or that money is the root of all evil.
Exactly. These beliefs can create self-fulfilling prophecies. If you don't believe you're capable of building wealth, you're less likely to take the steps necessary to achieve it.
So we need to reprogram our brains to think about money in a more positive and empowering way.
That's the idea. Instead of viewing money as a source of stress or anxiety, try to see it as a tool that can help you create the life you want.
I like that. Money is a tool for empowerment. It's a whole new perspective.
It is. And remember, building wealth is a marathon, not a sprint. It takes time, effort, and patience. There are no quick fixes or get-rich-quick schemes.
So no winning lottery tickets or finding buried treasure?
Unfortunately not. Building true, lasting wealth is more about making smart, consistent choices over the long term.
Okay, so slow and steady wins the race.
Exactly. It's about developing healthy financial habits and sticking with them even when things get tough.
This is all making a lot of sense. We've talked about so much already, from financial institutions to investments to the psychology of money. What else do we need to cover in our deep dive?
Well, we've talked a lot about the technical stuff, but there's one more piece of the puzzle that's absolutely crucial.
Ooh, what's that? The secret ingredient.
You could say that it's the human element, the psychology of money.
The psychology of money?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm intrigued.
It's all about how our emotions and beliefs about money can shape our financial decisions, sometimes for better and sometimes for worse.
Yeah, that makes sense. I know I've definitely made some impulse purchases in the past that I later regretted.
We've all been there, right? It's easy to get caught up in the moment and make decisions based on how we're feeling rather than what's actually best for our finances.
So how do we avoid those emotional traps and make smarter choices with our money?
It starts with self-awareness, taking a step back and really paying attention to our spending habits and our thoughts about money.
So like keeping a money journal or tracking my expenses for a month.
Exactly. That can give you a lot of insight into where your money is going and where you might be able to make some changes.
Okay, so awareness is key.
Yep.
What else?
Another big thing is challenging those limiting beliefs we often have about money.
Limiting beliefs? Like what?
Things like, I'm not good with money, or rich people are all greedy. Those kinds of thoughts can really hold us back from achieving our financial goals.
Yeah, I could see how that would be a problem. If you don't believe you can be successful with money, you're probably not going to try very hard.
Exactly. So it's important to identify those limiting beliefs and start to replace them with more positive and empowering ones.
So instead of saying I'm bad with money, I could say I'm learning to manage my finances better.
Exactly. It's a small shift in mindset, but it can make a big difference.
I'm starting to see how this psychology of money stuff is just as important as the technical aspects.
It really is. It's all connected. And when you can master both sides of the equation, that's when you can really start to make your money work harder for you.
This has been such an eye-opening deep dive. I feel like I've learned so much about financial institutions, interest rates, investments, and now the psychology of money. It's like all the pieces are starting to fall into place.
I'm glad to hear that. Remember, it's a journey, not a destination.
Right. So what's the one key takeaway you hope our listeners will walk away with from this deep dive?
I hope they'll remember that financial well-being is within everyone's reach. It doesn't matter where you're starting from or how much money you have. It's about taking small, consistent steps, learning along the way, and making choices that align with your values and your goals.
Beautifully said. And with that, I think it's time to wrap up this deep dive. Any final words of wisdom for our listeners?
Just remember, you've got this. Take what you've learned, put it into practice, and keep moving forward.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into making your money work harder for you. We hope you found it informative and empowering.
And until next time, keep learning, keep growing, and keep those smart money moves coming.
See you next time.